Teens today are facing a perfect storm of mental health challenges, increased academic pressures, and tech overload, all set against the backdrop of chronic sleep deprivation. While we all know how that sleep is essential for teens and their well-being, it is far too easy to downplay the risks or understand what's at stake when they're regularly skipping sleep in order to get everything done. And if we know the repercussions and serious risks to our kids by focusing them to get up early, well, why do we still do it? And how do we begin to protect them? Some of the questions answered in the new book, The Sleep-Deprived Teen, Why Our Teenagers Are So Tired, and How Parents and Schools Can Help Them Thrive. Advocate, educator, and journalist Lisa Lewis is the author of The Sleep-Deprived Teen, and we welcome Lisa to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. What brought you to this particular subject, this call to action, really?
Well, so I am a parent. I have a 17-year-old and a 20-year-old, and I'm also a parenting journalist. So often I've found that the things that I end up writing about are things really that have come up in our lives, and that was exactly the case with this issue of school start times and how they impact sleep. So I got involved in August of 2015, which is when my oldest, my son, was just entering high school. That was the beginning of his freshman year. And at that point, our public high school started at 7:30 in the morning. And that just really felt too early. It was the earliest he'd had to go to school at any point, you know, so far, elementary, middle, did not have that same early start time. And we were leaving the house every day at 7:10. I was driving him there, and it was pretty obvious. You know, he was not what we would call, you know, alert and in prime shape to be showing up at school for a full day of learning. So I started looking into it, and I quickly realized this was not unique just to our local public high school and our local community. And also, there was already a large and growing body of research out there. So again, this is 2015. The previous year, the American Academy of Pediatrics had issued a major policy statement recommending that middle and high school start no earlier than 8:30 in the morning because of the link between these really, really early start times and our teens' ability to get enough sleep and then the ramifications of that sleep deprivation for their health and well-being. So very clearly, 7:30 was too early. So I started writing about the issue, and my first articles were coming out the spring of his freshman year. And then I had a piece that ran beginning his sophomore year. So this was fall of 2016. It was an op-ed that ran in the Los Angeles Times called Why Schools Should Start Later in the Day. That op-ed ended up being read by one of our California state senators, Anthony Portantino, whose district is in Los Angeles, and who at that point had a high schooler of his own. So his daughter was attending their local high school, and it just so happened that their high school was in the midst of discussing whether to move to a later start time. So this was an issue that resonated with him. He decided to look into the issue further with an eye towards introducing a bill on the topic, and that is exactly what happened. And so as part of, you know, the information gathering, his office reached out to a group called Start School Later, which is a national nonprofit, and really has been a terrific information resource. It was for me as I was writing about this. And in fact, I had ended up starting up my own local chapter, you know, with an eye towards trying to make a change locally. So his office reached out to Start School Later. They, in turn, looped in all of us who were local chapter leaders in the state. So I actually was involved even before that bill officially was introduced. And that was indeed introduced in February of 2017. And that started this lengthy 2.5-year legislative journey. And I won't get into all the details here, but at the end of that, October of 2019, Governor Gavin Newsom finally signed that bill into law, had a 3-year implementation window. And so that has just gone into effect as of July 1st in California. And it is the first law of its scope in the entire country, first state to set minimum allowed start times, which here are 8:30 or later for the state's public high schools and 8 o'clock or later for the state's public middle schools.
So instead of children starting at 7:30, they're starting at 8:30, which I assume means they go to school an hour longer, meaning that instead of the regular time, they would get out an hour later.
Yes. So in a scenario where the previous start time was 7:30 and they were now starting at 8:30, the entire day shifts. So the issue is, though, that right now start times really are all over the map.
Yeah.
So there are plenty of schools that already were starting at a healthy start time. There are plenty that have shifted based on this research, but there are also schools out there that start even earlier. There are some in California that start as early as 7 a.m., and that is mandatory first period, be in your seat or you are marked absent or tardy or truant. So, you know, start times really have been all over the map. And I think the key thing to remember, too, is that these start times were not put in place with student well-being in mind. You know, in many cases, they were driven by the bus schedule. And so, you know, when we look at the fact that teen sleep deprivation is such a huge issue, and it really is a public health issue, you know, that really should take priority.
But the kids are expected to do the same amount of work and time. Yes, it's an hour later, but they're still doing a lot of, let's say, work that will make them tired. So you are putting it off, but are you moving it to sort of the back end as opposed to the front end? Or does that, what we know about sleep cycles, work better?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And in fact, that is something that often comes up. You know, the question is, oh, well, if we move the start times later, everything moves later, they're just going to stay up that much later and they're not going to get any more sleep. In fact, though, that is not the case, because this has been done in various districts around the country over the last several decades. If you can believe it, the first school to change its start time based on this information about teen sleep was back in 1996 in Edina, Minnesota. But what they have found consistently is that when schools move to later start times, students do indeed get more sleep. So what happens is they do stay up a little bit later at night, but they more than make up for it by the additional time that they spend sleeping in the morning. So as an example, the most recent data that I have is from Colorado. There's a district there. It's called Cherry Creek. It's a suburb in Denver, and it's fairly large. They have 55,000 students in the district. They changed to an 8:30 start time in 2017, and they did do pre and post surveys and to look at exactly this issue. And so what they found was when their high school start time moved from 7:10 to 8:20, the high schoolers were getting about 45 to 50 minutes more sleep each school night, which is tremendous.
When it comes to the times, I mean, that's sort of certainly one issue, but you also look at why the students are so tired, and they're doing a lot, right? There's a lot that they are required to do, and is that being addressed properly?
That is also a really key piece, and I'm glad you mentioned that. So, yeah, and I do get into, in the book, I have a couple of chapters looking at some of these other factors that are also impacting our teen's sleep. So I should say that, you know, far and away, the biggest change from a policy perspective is setting these healthy start times. So not having schools that start too early in the morning. But to your point, there are other factors that also are cutting into their sleep. And one of them often is the fact that they are just on overload. They're overscheduled. They, you know, when you look at the cumulative impact of all of the classes they're taking, the homework load for each of those classes, you know, particularly if they're taking honors level classes, plus the fact that many of our kids then go on and are doing sports. And maybe it's not just sports, it's also club level sports, or they're doing other extracurriculars, or maybe they have a job. So one of the things that I do have in the book, I graciously was allowed to reproduce this worksheet by a group called Challenge Success, which is a group that really does go around and talk to parents and schools about what does success mean? You know, how can we address this? And what I have in the back of the book is a worksheet that they've developed, which sort of allows you to plug in all of these different activities and you know, how much time the teen is spending on each of them, and looking at, have you even left a window of 8 to 10 hours there to give them the opportunity to be able to get enough sleep?
Does this get into, it seems like it would have to get into the whole debate over daylight savings time too, right?
Well, you know, that was funny because that did come up earlier this year, and it does appear that that has, I think that the headline I read was that it has hit a brick wall. So it is obviously inconvenient when we change our clocks twice a year.
Right.
You know, and so that was when this, the proposed legislation was introduced, was right after the time change in the spring, which does feel particularly difficult because when you spring forward, all of a sudden you're waking up essentially an hour earlier. And so nobody likes doing that. So what happens though, is when we do that, we're not changing the amount of hours of light in the day. We're just, you know, changing our clock. So it appears that way. Well, we already naturally have more hours of daylight during the summer months and fewer hours of daylight during the winter months. So when you think about what impact that would have during those winter months, the equivalent of getting up an hour earlier, meaning it's an hour darker than it already is,
right,
that's just not a good idea. So the official recommendations from the various sleep groups are no, do not switch to year-round daylight savings. If you're going to abolish this, you know, shifting twice a year, instead just go back to standard time year round.
When you think of what we know about kids and sleep, why, even the work that you've been doing on this, why do you think it took so long to realize that, wow, that's really early for a kid?
Yeah. You know, that's a really good question, because the research has been out there really for quite some time. I think it's really important just to help raise awareness of the fact that this really is an issue and that our teens are sleep deprived. And this is really taking a toll. And particularly when you think of things like mental health, because a lot of times I think people sort of tend to dismiss and say, oh, well, if they're so tired, they should just go to bed earlier. Or, you know, well, it was like that when I was in school. Well, we're doing harm right now with these too early start times, and helping people understand that no, teens can't just go to bed earlier. The fact that they do need 8 to 10 hours of sleep, and that there is a circadian rhythm shift that happens at the onset of puberty, which means they are no longer able to fall asleep as early as they did when they were younger. So what happens is melatonin, which is what primes us to start feeling sleepy, actually begins to be released later in the evening, doesn't subside until later in the morning. So our teens truly are on a later schedule. If you, even if they were to go to bed at 9 o'clock, you know, they're just going to lay there and stare at the ceiling. Like, that just isn't a viable option. But, you know, these schedules in many cases have been in place for years. And the ironic thing is they were not put in place because they were good for students or for families. They were often put in place because of the bus schedules and, you know, transportation concerns. And now we have all this research out there knowing that really our teens should not be going to school so early in the morning, but it requires making a change. And just the idea of change can also really be something that people push against. And particularly when you think about the fact that as parents, we have sort of constructed our lives based on those school schedules. So, you know, what time we have to get our kid to school, what time we have to pick them up, or making sure we have made arrangements on either end. And those often already change when our kids go through the system from elementary to middle to high. And, you know, I would say there's probably not even one case where that school schedule exactly mirrors a parent's work schedule. So it's already not convenient. And then you're talking about making a change. And so that tends to be the primary issue, is just having to make a change is difficult. And then bus transportation comes up. And then the other one is sports. And I'm happy to talk about either of those if you'd like.
Well, I mean, sports is a real issue because not only are you talking about sports teams that have to do with the schools that are involved with schools, but also various clubs and activities that are programs that are travel teams and take students out across the state for 3 hours out and 3 hours back. And you do wonder, and on the weekends and on holidays, and that all factors into it, doesn't it?
It does. But I would just say an example like that where they're traveling 3 hours each way. You know, I think it's also sort of important just to prioritize. Like when you look at schools, the primary reason our students are in school is not so they can play sports and become professional athletes. It's so that they can learn and they can, you know, develop the skills and develop into, you know, productive members of society. So the primary reason they're there is learning. And so when they have these schedules that are just taking away so much time, I mean, back to your point earlier about being overscheduled, I think that really is something to consider. But generally speaking, when you look at sort of, you know, if you're on your high school's team and you have practice and things like that, all of that shifts later, you know, because let's say the school start time shifts an hour later, the end time shifts an hour later. And so adjustments do have to be made. But that's been done in, you know, virtually every single school that has done this has some kind of extracurricular, you know, after school things, and they do adjust and they do so successfully. Looking back at, you know, Minneapolis, which did this many years ago, they did a study at the time and they found that the kids were still just as likely to participate in athletics, so didn't harm participation rates. But yes, if it's done at a district level, then the district does need to negotiate with the surrounding schools. You know, hey, we've changed our, because there's already a buffer built in, right? So they do need to go negotiate. And frankly, in many cases, your school will be in some local league where there are already a variety of different ending times. You know, that was the case here. The local league we were in, a couple of them were in our city, but then they were playing schools in other neighboring cities, and they already had a, you know, an array of different start and end times. However, that really is the beauty when you look at doing this change on a statewide level, because then you know that they are any, you know, if you were playing a school that starts at 7 a.m. and your school currently started at 8 a.m., you already have this disconnect you had to deal with. But if all schools now are required to start at 8:30 or later, that pretty much eliminates having to have those sort of conversations and adjustments, because that piece has already been taken care of for you.
Okay, so final question for you, Lisa Lewis, and that is, what about us? What about adults? What about parents? And what you're talking about should teach us about our own sleep?
That is a good question. I would say most of us probably are sleep deprived. You know, there was a 2020 poll by the National Sleep Foundation. They found that about half of the respondents said they felt sleepy at least 3 days a week. And about one-fourth of them said that it sometimes or often interferes with their daily activities. So, yeah, paying attention to sleep, I think, is important for us, too, as adults. So the official range for us is 7 to 9 hours. Mm-hmm. The official range for our teens up until age 18 is 8 to 10 hours. So I would say, you know, my message would be just to make sleep a priority, to recognize how when you're sleep deprived, it makes everything harder. There's not one single thing that we do better when we're sleep deprived. So, it, you know, and it just has such profound implications for all of us. It has implications for mental health. It has implications for how we're interacting with our kids. You know, when the parent has gotten a good night's sleep and the kid or teen has gotten a good night's sleep, obviously those interactions are going to go much more smoothly than they would if the opposite were true. And that's because sleep really is so important for our emotional resiliency.
The name of the book is The Sleep Deprived Teen, Why Our Teenagers Are So Tired and How Parents and Schools Can Help Them Thrive. The book is published by Mango. Lisa Lewis, thank you very much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Be well. Thank you so much. Again, the name of the book is The Sleep Deprived Teen, Why Our Teenagers Are So Tired and How Parents and Schools Can Help Them Thrive. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.